Welcome, everybody. It is another installment of JC and Morgan. JC on assignment. Hopefully, he'll be back here soon. We are part of the Chief Sports Network and College Football Forever. Had a week off last week. A lot of things going on. Could have easily punted July 4th week. But you're talking about two guys that don't take weeks off. Two guys that love the college football sport. 52 weeks out of the year. And I know my man that you see on the screen there to the left is hard at work on something when he's not handicapping soccer and horse racing and everything else. You know him as the Bear. His name is Chris Felica, now with Fox Sports, formerly of ESPN. And I was thinking about this, Chris. You're like one of the few people we have not had on this show yet, and that's my bad, because while we don't know each other intimately, we know a lot of the same people.
Yep.
We've come across each other more than a few times. One of my former co-hosts, Heath Klein, we used to do a pick contest, and I always knew when he got advice from you, he'd be very arrogant on certain picks. And I was like, let me guess, you got that one from the Bear. Maybe? Okay, I got you. Anyway, it's a pleasure to have you on. I know I speak for a lot of people that listen to this show. I'm just a fan of yours. I can't even like totally put my finger on it because we're not huge handicappers. This is not a pick show, although as an announcer, we all know the spread. You know, you don't do 20 hours of research for a game and not know the spread. And I loved your presence on game day, and I love what you brought to the table and now on Fox. So let me start by saying that, butter you up a little bit before we get started.
No, I appreciate that. And I think something that I always have on my mind, and it's not that I make an effort to be someone that I'm not. I make an effort to be exactly who I am as a person. And I think that probably has a lot of the appeal that I'm just kind of a normal college football fan like everybody else out there. I root for my alma mater. I try and be as objective and passionate and clear as possible. I don't play favorite towards the Big Ten or the SEC or a particular conference or team. I'm just someone that feels like it would be kind of approachable to come over and sit down and watch a game and hang out. And that's kind of who I am. So I think that probably is a reason why people did kind of take to and appreciate the little bit of angle and thoughts that I did on game day.
Yeah, there's no question. And by the way, I always have fun with this, so I have to continue because we see the UM helmet in the background.
Yes.
You're not just a Miami fan. You actually not only know where the campus is, which is more than most Miami fans, but you actually went there and got a degree. So kudos to you on that.
Well, as I say, at any, I'm from one of the two places University of Miami students are. Either you're from South Florida or you're from the Northeast in New York along New Jersey and Long Island. So that's right. That's where I am. But yeah, 5821 Santa Maro Drive, the University of Miami Athletic Department.
There you go.
You want to go to lunch at the Big Cheese? Where do you want to go in South Florida?
Hey, I'm down. I've been to the campus. I have friends that went there. They're much smarter than me. They're like doctors and lawyers and so they're pretty legit, but
there's us talking college football,
and then there's boobs like us
going, and we have like not real jobs.
Exactly. But no, one of the things I loved about your background, and for those that don't know, and I'll bet you there's a lot of younger people, I mean we kind of run the spectrum of age here, but there's probably a lot of 20 something year olds that only know you as the Bear on TV. They don't know you as the guy who was grinding, which I have a lot of respect for, as a research analyst behind the scenes. That's how you got your start in Bristol, correct?
Yes. Yeah. No, I was before they started throwing me on air. I guess it was around 2012, I think, was the first year I started doing stuff on air. No, I had been with College Game Day as a researcher, research producer, going to that role since 1996. Kirk and I started the same year, which is kind of why we have and still have. The relationship that we do. I was joking with someone last week, not joking, but talking about how the evolution of doing my job has changed, because I still have access to great databases. And my inquisitive mind is always thinking of if I'm a fan, if I'm a producer, if I'm an analyst, if I'm a host, like what do I want to know? And so I can remember, I shared a story about and how now it's easy to click, sort, filter, drop down, average gain on first down, average distance to go on third down, completion percentage on third down, passer rate, whatever. I can remember in the 1997 season when we had that conversation about Michigan and Tennessee and Nebraska, but Washington, and we had the Michigan and Washington State Rose Bowl. I can remember having to call, not email, call the sports information departments at Michigan and Washington State, and I had them run Xeroxes of all 11 of their game books from the year, so I could go through manually and do things like that and look at average gain on first down, average distance to go on third down, like both sides of the ball, just to kind of give Kirk stuff for the show and broadcasts as well. So we've come a long way from like grinding over, looking through 11 game books throughout the course of a year to now just something that takes 5 or 10 minutes to kind of filter in pretty well.
That's so true. And Herbie gave you the nickname Bear, is that correct?
No.
Oh, somebody else. Okay.
Oh, that was Lee Corso.
Oh, that was Corso. I didn't know that.
Corso gave me but I was with Kirk at the time the nickname came about. Are we a family-friendly program or not? I need to know before.
You can let it all fly.
Okay, yes. It's not too bad. So we are at a bowl game, and we're having Kirk and I are having brunch in a lobby, a restaurant, and I'm kind of looking like with a T-shirt that I have on like right now, gym shorts. Kirk, same thing. We woke up late, and we're sitting there, and anyone that knows Kirk and I know that any dead, and Heath can tell you for sure, any dead space on the table is wasted space. Like, it has to be food like all throughout the table. So Lee Corso comes walking in from a morning walk, and he's got his typical uniform. This is early 2000s, so like he's still totally with it pre-stroke. Always, and he still went for a walk and exercised even after the stroke. But he comes in, he's got his black leather jacket, blue jeans, white tennis shoes, and Lee never made any like qualms about trying to hide or like not be noticed. So Lee comes walking in, sees Kirk and I, and in typical Lee fashion, yo, Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Felica, how you guys doing? And now here's us who were trying to look incognito. Now everybody knows we're here, and Lee makes a beeline over to the table. And Lee looks at the table. He looks at Kirk, he looks at the table, and he looks at me, and he just shakes his head and goes, Felica, look at you. You're just like a bear. You eat, you sleep, you shit, you go take another nap, and you do it all over again. You're a bear. So it stuck.
It stuck. That's fantastic. I never knew that whole story, but for some reason, I just thought the nickname fit all the way. Like that. First of all, it's a cool nickname. I don't know many other people nicknamed the Bear. But well, it obviously
other than Paul Bryan, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. I'm trying to think of like general people in our profession, not necessarily coaches or even. I'm sure there's been a few. There was Florida State had a guy named Pooh Bear Williams. Yep. Did they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the day. That's an all-time nickname. But, was it Francesa? Was he not the research analyst for Brent Musburger?
Yep, he did research for CBS for college football.
Yeah.
For the longest time before it ultimately turned into the insane career that he had. And he was obviously someone growing up in the Northeast. I grew up listening to Mike and the Mad Dog, and I was fortunate enough to work as an intern one summer. At WFAN, so I got to. It was a great way to structure the internship. You did three days a week. You had one shift was like the morning shift where you'd kind of come in at the end of the Imus in the morning show and go into it was Len Bourbon at the time and Lupica, and then you have that. Then you do one that was the Mike and the Mad Dog show and something else. And then you had a late night, but it was awesome. And there were so many people there that Steve Levy was there at the time. Ian Eagle was there at the time. Steve Summers, Mike Breen. It was just a great time to be at FAN in the early 90s.
Yeah, that's, I mean, again, if anybody that's ever listened to sports radio or been a part of it, as we all have, I mean, that's, you kind of have to pay homage to, that's the OG, right? I mean, Mike and the Mad Dog, WFAN, when people thought it was crazy to do 24-hour sports, now we just accept that as that's normal. Mm-hmm. You're not a normal market if you don't have 24-hour sports, and many markets have multiple stations. But I, you know, again, as somebody who does play-by-play, a lot of people ask me, man, how did you come up with that great nugget? And I was like, that's not me. I have a stat guy every game that sits to my right. I have a spotter and I have a stat guy. Sometimes they make me look a lot smarter than I actually am. And guys like you that started in that part of it, you help people like at the time, Fowler and eventually Reese, Herbie, Lee, you come up with so much material. They've got a million other things to worry about. So that valuable part, I don't know if your average person that's watching TV on a Saturday, watching whatever pregame show, if they actually know that these guys aren't coming up with all that on their own.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that there is a portion of the audience that does realize that there are stats guys and researchers involved. And now, since I've moved over to Fox, like, there are a couple of things that I really, really miss from not being at ESPN. I miss Stanford Steve and the Bear immensely, and people all over the country every week tell me how much they miss that pod. I miss being involved in the college football playoff coverage and being at those games. And I miss being in the truck for those ABC, ESPN, Saturday night primetime games, all the big games that Kirk calls, because I was actually in the game truck with Bill Bunnell, the producer, and the stats people, that I'd have maybe on headset directly to Chris and Kirk in the truck, so I could literally hit talk back and go right into the area with an observation or a nugget or a stat that I have been talking about. So I miss those three things immensely. But we move on, we grow, we do things. But it was a lot of fun. And I, and to this day, like I said earlier, I still do a lot of my own research. I come up with my own nuggets. I got a poll database. I got access to the True Media statistical database, all the odds databases. So all this stuff, I'm still kind of, and people know me, like I said, as a handicapper now, the newer, I still am a researcher at heart. And that kind of is the root of all my information. Like, it's interesting because there's like the conflicting schools of thought. Like the handicapper school of thought is like, it's all history, nonsense. We just want to know power ratings. What's the best number? Where do we find an edge? Whereas I don't agree with that. I think there is something to be said for a historical angle, a historical. Now, the teams may change, the players may change, the coaches may change, but the types of teams and situations don't change. And like using history to look at how a team that is ranked in the top 20 might be an underdog to an unranked team and how that history has played out. Like the teams are different, but the types of teams are the same. And that can help you isolate some situations and some picks to help you along the way. And I guess Corso would be like the old saying where he said that somebody knows something and I'm going with the somebody's. Right. It's kind of along those lines. Like the line is telling you the unranked team is favored, that's the right side to pick in the game. Yeah. And the history is there to back it up.
This is a weird time to say this, given the climate that we're in. Gambling is not only acceptable, it is promoted religiously around college sports. And yes, of course, we had a recent scandal with Sorsby at Texas Tech. But I've always thought, like, I've never been an actual big gambler. I'm a great winner, but I'm a terrible loser. So that's why I stay away from casinos and whatnot. But I've always been fascinated with point spreads, and we do pick contests and having fun with that. And I think the reason why, whether it's ESPN or Fox or any other pregame show, the point spreads are everywhere, and the nuggets that guys like you come up with are everywhere. It's not for the hardcore gamblers. Of course, they're already going to know all that, right? It's for your average fan that's not a big gambler, but they love that type of input.
I'm so glad you said that, because the thing I am most proud of in my time at Game Day, and Chris Fowler has a lot to do with this as well, because Chris understood that people wanted the odds. They wanted a Vegas spread. They wanted to know this information. And we really, I think, were the first pregame show or TV show to really go full on and embrace that. Look, we're not being naive. We know people are betting on games. If we do it in a kind of a fashion where it's entertaining and educational. And that was my challenge as well, to come up with stuff like, for example, like you said, the common fan would want to know, like, oh, Ohio State is a 14-point favorite today over Michigan State. But you know what? It might not be as simple and big as a blowout as you think. If you look at the last 10 times, Michigan State has been a double-digit underdog under Mark D'Antonio. They've covered the spread 8 times and won 5 outright. So this it might look like a mismatch on paper, but it's really not. So to kind of give fans like a, okay, let me pay attention to that game when I might not. That was always the challenge for me, to try and create that crossover from hardcore betting into bringing people who are looking for information and just want to watch football.
Yeah, the overwhelming majority of people that are hearing you give those nuggets, they're not racing to call their bookie or go to the app to place a bet. They're going, oh, man, we shouldn't be overconfident today, because Chris Felica just told us, actually, as a double-digit favorite, we've lost the game outright X amount of times. I mean, that kind of stuff is,
Wait a minute. Why is there Urban Meyer is an underdog again? Like, the 7 times that he's been an underdog at Florida and Ohio State, they've won the game outright every time. Like, well, why shouldn't we be betting Ohio State to beat Alabama and beat Oregon in the college football playoff? They're an underdog in both. So, like, those types of things are not only helpful to bettors who just go ahead, play the underdog on the money line, and it's helpful to, like, fans, like, kind of scratch your head, like, wow, he has a pretty good track record in these games. Like, wow, this would be interesting to see if this continues.
So my old boss, of course, there's been a changeover. Your old boss, because he's because you're at Fox, but was Lee Fitting the one that said we need to put this guy on TV, give him a segment?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Lee Fitting and I go back a long, long way with the show. Yeah. I can remember going over to his house on Mondays week for years, and we would come up, we would have lunch and kind of put together the format and the shell and the rundown of the show. And he is one of my biggest advocates, if not the biggest advocate, along with Kirk and Chris as well. But Lee, when PABSCA got repealed, and it was, I don't want to say the wild, wild west, but betting became kind of accepted and legalized now. He was like, okay, we're putting you on air. And of course I was like, I don't want to come across as the loud New Yorker who's flailing his hands everywhere and talking really fast like I am with you right now. He's like, stop. He goes, you know, we're not going to do that. He goes, I think you'll be really good and you have a lot to offer, because that was one of the things. Like, I would be very animated and very vocal because I'd have all this information that I was looking up for the show, and maybe the guys didn't necessarily know or see it or couldn't deliver it in the way that I did. So in meetings, I would be very animated about, guys would pick a favorite, no upset, and I'd be like, oh, here we go again. All the favorites win all the time. Yeah. And finally, we got to the point where, like, oh, we're going to put you on air, and it's going to be great. And first it was just kind of interjecting in conversations. And then we created the board as a good device, which worked out really well as well. And we just kind of went from there. But no, Lee is a friend to this day and will always be a friend.
Yeah. And again, I think it added something to the show. My favorites are when, you know, it's like rivalry weekend and you're talking Michigan, Ohio State. Let's send it over to the Bear. Bear, what's your second pick? There's a battle in the Sun Belt that nobody's talking about between Louisiana Monroe and Texas State. And I'm telling you right now, take Texas State plus the 6.5.
Yeah, I think the Eastern Michigan magnet was like one of the favorite magnets that got thrown up on the board, because my record with like Eastern Michigan was fantastic. And Chris Creighton's wife actually like sent me DMs like many times, just loving that I was like paying attention and knew their team and knew their coach and knew their situation. But that was part of the education. And that was one of the reasons Fox reached out to me as well. Like, one of their goals with Big Noon was to kind of get more teams, more games, more of the kind of off the radar, like storylines involved in some things. And that's kind of what I try to do every week when I have my little, my little side set conversation with Brady Quinn. Like, I try and talk about rivalries that people might not know about, the Battle of the Ravine and how the schools were right across the ravine, and Amherst Williams or a Sun Belt game that's going to factor into the potentially into the college football playoff race of the group of six. So, like, getting things like that into the show is always something that I am looking to do, because I understand nowadays you've got the Power Four. And even within the Power Four, it's a different strata. And then the Group of Six is a completely different sport. And we need to realize and understand that not everybody went to Ohio State or Michigan or USC or Clemson or Alabama or Georgia. Like, there are people out there that went to Texas State or San Diego State or Troy or Tulane. Like Hearing a little nugget about their alma mater, their game, makes their day. I can't tell you the number of, like, emails, cards, little thank you notes that Stanford Steve and I, one of my last years there, like, UTSA became like our adopted team.
Right.
Coach reached out, equipment guy reached out, sent a bunch of stuff. Like, things like that. Tulane sent me a helmet because I'm talking about how that helmet was immense, and it might be, I don't know if it's on the shelf behind me or if it's downstairs, but relationships matter, and just letting people know that you're paying attention, and it's not a futile battle, and they don't matter at all. It's great. So I will try and interject with a good little storyline from the Group of Six.
No, it's great. And I get that from, you know, as you know, when you're an announcer, you don't get to pick your assignments every week. And I've called a UTSA game at the Alamo Dome, and even Larry Coker was the coach. Yep. Like, and you just remember that stuff. And I think for some reason it's become cool to say, oh, I follow 1AA FCS football. I watch the playoff, and I know North Dakota State, and I know South Dakota State. But the forgotten programs and the forgotten fans are the Group Six, which really is, like, as you mentioned, it's a lower classification. They're not playing with nearly the same resources. No. And so people kind of push that to the side. It's so easy to do. And I hope eventually, it's just, we've talked about this on the show for years, I hope they get a G6 playoff, because I think it would crush it, but I don't know if that'll actually happen.
I think it will too. And this is another hot button water cooler conversation where you want to rile people up when you talk about how there really shouldn't be, should there be or should there not be an automatic G6 qualifier to the playoff? And last year we had two. And that's when you suggest that it's a completely different sport than the Power Four, and people get worked up over that. And I mean, all the evidence and the money and the draft picks, everything indicates that it is. And look, I don't have a problem if we have a historically good, great Group of Six team, like we've had Andy Dalton with TCU and the Boise State teams that were so great when Utah under Urban and even under Witt, when they were Mountain West and they were in the midst. Like, if you've got a great team like that and you are in the top 12 or top four, whatever, absolutely they should be in and be given a shot. I just don't like now where you've got a Group of Five or a Group of Six team, and they're 9-3 or whatever. You lose a couple of non-conference games. You lose one of your conference games, and it's okay. You're the highest ranked Group of Six team, and you're 21st, and we're going to put you in. And you've got a team like Notre Dame, who could have won the national title last year, or a team like Texas that played a ridiculous schedule and didn't make it in. Like, that's where I kind of don't like the automatic bid. But if you've got a great team, by all means, give them a shot.
Yeah, if you're 0-4 Utah and your quarterback is the number one pick in the draft, and your coach is Urban Meyer, that's different than what we saw last year, quite frankly, where it was just two sacrificial lambs. And those games, you saw the different level of football when it was played. Our guest is Chris Felica. You can follow him on X, Twitter, at Chris Felica. He's with Fox Sports, and many of you know him as The Bear. We're going to get into this year. There's a number of things I want to ask you about this year, but I'm going to ask you this real quick. Biggest college football hit in terms of something you forecasted, whether it be on a game day set or anywhere for that matter, the one where everybody was like, damn, Chris, how'd you pull that one out? And the biggest miss where everybody was like, oh, I thought you were really smart, Bear. Apparently not.
I can remember. I think the biggest hit was, I can't remember if it was 15, 16. It was one year of the college football playoff rankings, and it was a year where I think Texas A&M debuted at like four, or they were fourth in the college football playoff rankings, mm-hmm. and they were a double-digit favorite against Mississippi State, who had been struggling, and I called the outright Mississippi State upset win. Nice. Over A&M, and I took a lot of you know what for it.
Oh hell yeah!
Not a pick on the air. You. And then old Klanga went out there and pulled off the upset. So that was a really good one. Ohio State to win the national championship in 2014.
You had that at the beginning of the year.
Really? If you remember they that was when. They lost
Virginia Tech.
They lost to starting quarterback, and then they lost to Virginia Tech. Yes. And then you lose your quarterback again prior to the playoff, and Cardale Jones comes in, and they still wind up winning. So that worked out well for me. Oof.
What kind of odds could I have gotten on that? Beginning of the year.
I got I think it was 8-1, and then I bet them again after the loss to Virginia Tech. Nice. Because it's one of the good things about like my knowledge of like the way the system works, knowing that Ohio State, if they won the Big Ten, they were going to be in the playoff, mm-hmm. and got a great price. Same thing happened in the year that Pitt wound up going to Death Valley and beating Clemson. That was 16. After that loss, Clemson went from like 7-2 to like 6-1. And I go, wait, I'm like, the loss ultimately means nothing. Like, they're going to win the ACC. They're going to get in the playoff. And, like, so that was another one that worked out last year. I was tooting Miami's horn whenever I could, because I have good connections within the program, and I knew how good this team was. Remember, early in the year last year, we were having the conversation, who's the best team in the country, Miami or Ohio State? And then Miami had like 9 starters out against SMU and late penalty. They wound up losing that game. And then at the end of the year, they're playing the best football they could. But after the SMU loss, they fell to like 150-1 to win the national title. Oh, no. And like, I'm like, okay, fine. But knowing that if they got into the same like discussion as Notre Dame, they were going to pass them. They were going to be in the playoff, and just knowing how good they were, like, okay, I'm going to take a chance on that. Now, they didn't win the game, but at 150-1, it's like, I'm trying to think of some of the swings and misses. I mean, there have been many for sure. And
because
sure
fans will let you know about it.
I was going to say, I'm sure the SEC fans will let me know. Clemson against LSU. That was a bad one. When Burrow and LSU absolutely annihilated
2019
Paris Clemson in 2019. Yeah, that was a very, very bad one.
What was the spread on that game?
Clemson was like a 5.5-6 point dog, and I was like, Clemson plus a touchdown. I mean, clearly this defense, and they'll clearly lock down, and then Burrow throws for like 300 yards in the first half.
And
it was over. So that was an embarrassing one. I've had some big underdogs. I think I had Fresno State as a big dog against someone, and they wind up losing by like 40 and not even coming close to covering. So there have been a bunch of situations.
Sure.
Certainly where I throw up some of those lesser magnets on the board. I remember I think San Jose State on a Friday night against Cal once got absolutely annihilated, didn't even score. So there have been individual bad games like that, but in terms of like really whiffing on a big game, 2019 title game, Clemson LSU certainly was the biggest whiff that I had.
Yeah, you went against maybe the best college football offense I've seen in 50 years. I mean,
because why would I, right?
Well, sometimes you got to take big swings if you're going to hit home runs. If somebody took a swing on Indiana before the start of last year, they would have hit a home run.
People did. I know people that did. And I
really,
yeah.
Wow.
I know someone that bet Mendoza at 150 to one, I believe, to win the
Heisman. Heisman.
Yeah.
How could somebody know? I mean,
and this
how?
person, well, his daughter goes to Cal.
So
he
okay.
watched a lot of Cal football the previous year. And made the assumptions like, I like this kid. He's smart. And Indiana clearly is better than Cal. He's going to be surrounded by better players. And it was a long shot type bet. And he even asked me, he's like, do I think Mendoza has a shot of winning? I'm like, no, I get your bet in the number. And finally, the number is great, but I don't think he can win.
Right.
And then sure enough, they had a great year and wound up winning it all. So that was and even during the year, they still were 7-8, even after the win against Oregon early on, they were still around 8-10, 11-1. So it took a lot of people, it took Vegas a long time finally coming around on Indiana. And even before the playoff last year, I played, there was a prop, will the CFP one be won by the number one or number two seed? And I bet the no, just because I didn't think.
Right.
Indiana or Ohio State would ultimately wind up winning it, and another loser for Bears Bank.
Well, that Miami was about 40 yards away from you winning that bet, but
yeah, 40 yards, and a missed block on a punt. Yeah, it's interesting because we talk about the analytics and all the advanced stats and metrics that are out there. Every now and then, I will. Click. I'm not over the loss yet. I'll put it to the end. It was there to be had. I'm sure a lot of your listeners and viewers are familiar with the Game On Paper site, where it's kind of an analytical view of the box score, and it gives kind of EPA for both sides of the ball, and special teams. And you look at the EPA and like the win probability for like the Miami Indiana game, and you look at offense, you look at defense, and it's like Miami massive advantage, and then you look at special teams, and it's like Indiana plus like 38 point, because obviously the missed field goal for Miami, the block for a touchdown. So yeah, it was you win two of the three phases of the game and you lose. It's a hard to swallow,
but it's a hard pill to swallow. Yeah. But I mean, they're right up there again, which kind of leads me to my next question. I mean, we are living in a different time. I used to talk about that college football, as great as it is, as much as we love it, became insanely predictable. It was the same three or four teams that we were talking about to win a title every year. Now it's the same conference with three different teams, and it's not the SEC, it's the Big Ten. On top of that, you know, you look at, I've got five different preseason polls, and I've got Notre Dame picked in one, Oregon in another, Indiana in another, and Ohio State has two. That's the closest thing to a consensus. So maybe we can, with NIL and everything that people hate to talk about, maybe we can actually have this a little more diverse in terms of teams that can win the whole thing, right?
Yeah, and I admit I was wrong. I thought the pay-for-play era was going to kind of just make the rich get richer, and it hasn't. You can legitimately, in your little unscientific study there, preseason magazines and polls, you could make a case. You could say Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, Notre Dame, Miami, Texas, Georgia. Like, I'd say those seven teams probably.
Yeah.
You could say, I think any of those seven teams are going to win the national championship. And you probably wouldn't, I mean, you wouldn't be told, oh, you're dead wrong.
Right.
Like, any of those seven teams could win and nobody would be shocked. When was the last time you really went into a season thinking that you had seven legitimate national title contenders like right now? And you mentioned the conference hierarchy. One of the other conversations that I like to have and try and interject in is like, people have a hard time understanding and thinking and holding two thoughts in their head at the same time. It is possible for the SEC to still be the best and deepest conference to 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also possible that the Big Ten has three teams in Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana that are better than anybody in the SEC. Like, both of those 10 things can be true. And I think they are
You're preaching to the choir. We've talked about that. Like, I'm not even so sure being the deeper league anymore works to your advantage in terms of winning a title.
Does it?
Because a deeper league means a harder schedule. It means an easier way to get bounced out, right?
Yep.
I mean, I have nothing but respect for Indiana and what Coach Cignetti has done, not just last year but the year before in a playoff bid. But you'd be lying if you looked at that schedule and put it up to some of the others, particularly of some of the elites in the SEC, and said these are the same things. They're not. But it doesn't matter. People remember Indiana won it. Nobody cares about how, well, my schedule was stronger. Nobody cares.
No, nobody cares. And that's one of the issues with the playoff, is that we really don't know what type of strength of schedule, strength of record, numbers and power ratings that they're using. There is no sport out there, professional or college, that is more dictated and affected and schedule adjusted than college football. And they should have seen this coming with the conference expansion and these mega conferences now, where you're not playing every team in your league. The swings within the conference amongst the opponents that you play are dramatic. And not everybody plays the 9 conference games. Not everybody has to play, mandates you play another Power 4 team in the non-conference. Mm-hmm. Until we get a little bit of continuity and uniformity in scheduling, we're going to continue to run into this problem. And this is the SARC debate. Like, I should have mentioned Texas Tech before, make that 8 teams in that conversation. That's what SARC is talking about with, like, Texas Tech and their schedule, and saying, yeah, I could play my backups against Texas Tech's schedule and go 10-2 and make the playoff. And he's right. The Big 12 is not a great league. Texas Tech is a great story and a good team and a good program now. Love Joey McGuire. He's come on my show. He's been fantastic. They were great to us there. BYU is a good story, but they're not on the level of all those other teams. Utah, we'll see what happens with Whittingham gone now. But the Big 12 is just kind of this, like, combination of, like, leftovers from certain leagues that just kind of got thrown together by default. So you still cannot compare the schedule in the SEC. And that's why, what was Texas last year? 9-3, and you lose a non-conference game in the opening
to
game
Ohio State.
To Ohio State. And when you held them to, 190 yards, and they scored their touchdown late in the fourth quarter. Like, that's what the playoff committee really needs to start taking into account, is the way results come to fruition, the schedule, situation, circumstance, and until I think we're going to eventually get what we did last year with Alabama losing the SEC title game in 3 losses. I don't even know if they should have been, but there was ultimately no way you could leave a team that played in the SEC championship out.
What about, since you mentioned the Big 12, a league you're certainly familiar with because your favorite team plays in it, and that's the ACC. It's with Clemson fading. We'll see if they bounce back this year, but the fade is undeniable. Florida State has been a mess. The middle just is perpetually the middle. You know, they can't get above them. The NC States, the North Carolinas. Virginia was a great story last year, but it's still Virginia. Virginia Tech is a long ways from Beamerland. So outside of Miami, like, what is it? How does the ACC get back to any type of prominence? Or are they going to be, because we're kind of living in a Big 2 world in a lot of ways, right? SEC, Big 10. Does the ACC have any chance of climbing and ascending to that level or closer to it?
I think that they're going to need 2 of 3 things to happen. They're going to need Florida State to figure things out financially within the state of their program and be able to compete at a recruiting level in that state with Miami and Florida. And we'll see if Mike Norvell is a part of that or not. There's a large faction of people who follow Florida State that want Mike Norvell gone. So we'll see ultimately if that happens. That's one thing. Number 2 is that James Franklin can build Virginia Tech back into something close to what we saw when Frank Beamer was there. And early reports, he is someone who is a great recruiter. He is a great salesman. Now, certainly he's had his troubles against the Ohio States and top 5 teams of the world, but that guy can coach. I mean, he took Vandy to bowl games and turned them around and made them a winner. He brought a lot of guys from Penn State with him. I think they are going to be on the up. And then you need to figure out what's going on with Clemson. Clemson needs to figure things out, whether they continue to do what they're doing and not really embracing the portal. Look, I get it and admire Dabo's school of thought on this and want to try and do things the way he's done it forever, but it's a new day and age. You need to adapt or die, and right now that's what's happening. They haven't adapted, and they've been dying. We'll see if coaching changes again there on the staff. Like, can they figure this out? So if they can get two of those three things right, I think they'll be in a better position. If not, I really worry about the long-term validity and existence of this league, because there are already talks out there about certain schools either going to the Big Ten or going to the Big 12 or going to the SEC. And as a long time Big East and ACC hoops junkie from the 80s growing up, like I still to this day, like, will mistake in Maryland to be in the ACC.
Oh, I do it all the time.
And that's where I am. But yeah, I do concern. This is that kind of the conversation in terms of like team strength that I bring up all the time, like, all because the ACC and the Big 12 aren't great conference-wise depth of opponents in there does not mean that Texas Tech and Miami aren't great teams. It's kind of like what Florida State was in 2013. Remember, the ACC was terrible. In 2013 outside of Florida State and Clemson. Brutal. Mm-hmm. But we knew from watching Florida State that they were really damn good.
Oh, yeah.
And all because they didn't play in the SEC or the Big Ten didn't mean that they weren't national title worthy. And ultimately, they went on and did win the national title. So conference strength and team overall strength, really, again, you need to try and hold those two thoughts in your head and realize that both can be true.
I used to make the analogy that year that, or even that time frame, that Florida State was so much better than everybody in the league. And then when Clemson was so much better than everybody in the league, you know, that was the Huey Lewis and the rest of the league was the news, right? I mean, the rest of the league was like, you didn't know even know who they were, who was on their team. It didn't matter. You just knew Huey Lewis. Like, that's your front man.
They were the heart and soul of the conference.
They were walking a thin line. Hopefully they didn't need another drug. There we go.
That's the problem. They needed another drug. Come on stage with them.
That's right. We just covered the whole sports album. closing minutes with the Bear, Chris Felica. So let's turn it to 2026. We don't have to go. You can either do odds or just who you like in general. You don't have like a magazine, but do you post like a preseason tuple, or how do you do that?
I do not. I will post some preseason thoughts. And I did a little preseason burning questions post a couple of months ago on Fox Sports. I posted some season win total thoughts. We'll have some Bear Bets pods coming up on Fun College Football once the World Cup finishes up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have some thoughts on the air. Like, one of the thoughts that I did put out there already is that I do think that the winner of that Miami-Notre Dame game on September 7th, I think the winner of that game will finish number one and undefeated and be the number one seed in the college football playoff rankings. You look at Notre Dame's schedule, and outside of the Miami game, and then they got the trip to BYU, which, depending on your viewpoint on BYU, that is what it is. But I think the way the schedule for Miami breaks down as well, you've got that game. They do go to Clemson, so maybe at that point in the year where Clemson is either still in it or they're hot, who knows, that potentially could be a trouble spot. But you look at Notre Dame now with C.J. Carr, a year better, one better defensive lines in the country, Leonard Moore, great defensive back. You'll lose your running backs and Love and Price, obviously, but the way they've recruited, they should be okay. And then Miami, the biggest question I have about Miami is, and we've seen this with certain teams and certain leagues and sports and time and time again, the guys who were the leaders, the locker room core guts guys that would lead by the C.J. Daniels, the Keelan Marions, the Reuben Baines, the Keontae Scotts, the Akeem Messidors, the Carson Beck, the guys who had all of those starts and all of those experiences, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a really good chance on paper Miami is more talented than they were last year. And it's going to take someone like a Mark Fletcher or a Mo Touré or someone like that, a Moton, to step up and be the kind of the alpha in that locker room and not only lead with their play on the field, but lead with their example and their motivation and their leadership off the field as well. So if you're looking for something to be concerned about with Miami, it would be that. But talent-wise, I think they are going to potentially be better than they were last year. So that's kind of one thing that I have put out there. I think Michigan looks like a 7-5 team on paper. If you look at the teams that they played last year that finished the season ranked, they lost by double digits every single game. I am not sure Bryce Underwood is going to be the quarterback that everybody thought he was going to be. I think Michigan stepped into it with the Kyle Whittingham hire. It could have gone so much worse and so much more sideways than it did after the Sharon Moore situation. So I think this is kind of a free roll, a punt type year for Michigan. Now, obviously Michigan fans don't want to hear that, but I think if you look at road games at Oregon and Ohio State, you probably can't expect them to win either of those games. You've got Oklahoma, you've got Iowa, you've got Penn State at home. You got a trip to Minnesota. Like those are all losable games, and their season win total was 8.5. So if you go 8-4, that's a season win total under. And I think 7-5 is really on the table for Michigan this year, because they still don't have that game breaker on the offensive side of the ball at wide receiver either.
Yeah, and I'm with you on Underwood. Seeing him up close last year against Michigan State, I was not blown away. I just maybe he takes a major jump this year. I did not see that last year. SEC wise, everybody and their grandmother has Texas, Georgia 1-2 or vice versa. Do you differ from that at all? And perhaps more importantly, where do you look to for, say, 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah, no, I think that's where it is. I think one of the things from last year with the so much pressure that Arch and hype that Arch came in with and obviously struggled early on, but people, I think, missed at the end of the year last year that he was really, really good. Yeah. They started using him in the run game a lot more, and I think he showed in the bowl game. Granted, it was the bowl game against a lot of opt-outs and whatever, but he was fantastic. So I think he's going to be better, and Texas will be better for that this year. Georgia will ultimately find out if the quarterback can be the difference maker in the passing game that they need him to be. The bowl loss to Ole Miss was a really, really bad loss for them to blow that game the way that they did, clock mismanagement. But I do think Texas, Georgia 1-2. I would probably say Ole Miss would probably be third for me. I think you bring back Lacey and Chambliss at quarterback. Like that is a dynamic 1-2 on offense. And being at the Fiesta Bowl last year and seeing that firsthand, they are really good now. Can their defensive front be as good as it has been the previous couple of years? That remains to be seen, but they can outscore anyone with those two guys running the show. I think they will be good. A&M, I'm curious. I think they'll still be in that top 4-5 range, but they had a ton of guys drafted off that team. You lose Moss at running back. Like there's a scenario where they could be in that 8-4 type range too if things go poorly. But again, they have recruited well. Can these guys coming in this year make an instant impact? After that, I'm down on Alabama. Like I am selling Alabama. I know they made the playoff last year, but just the vibe there, the quarterback situation, we'll see how that goes now. When obviously the loser of that job is going to go somewhere else. I'd be very hesitant on backing Alabama to get back to the playoff. But I think, yeah, Georgia, Texas are the clear 1-2. I think Ole Miss certainly is 3. And then after that, you can throw Alabama, A&M, and LSU in that kind of area there and kind of mix and match wherever you want.
Last one for you. Have you peeked at all at some Heisman odds? Anything you like there?
Yeah, no, I bet CJ Carr at the Open at +850, just kind of the scenario that I did bet him, just because that I laid out. And I got a good number on Darian Mensah, Miami quarterback, as well, 20-1. Just assuming that, hey, if my hypothesis is right, and the winner of this game is going to go undefeated and be number one in the country, then there's a really good chance that the quarterback of the number one team in the country is going to win the Heisman Trophy. And it's from a handicapping point of view, I think it's a little unfortunate because we mentioned those teams at the top, and they've all got big-name quarterback, whether it's Arch, C.J. Carr, Mensah, Julian Sain, Dante Moore. Like, with all of those teams in the mix, I think it's going to be really hard to find a long shot like Fernando Mendoza last year or Travis Hunter the year before, who we gave out. Like, it feels like it's going to be a very formful Heisman race. So if you can pick one of the – if LSU has a great year, is it Sam Levitt? Like, it doesn't seem like – Fernando Chambliss is another one. It feels like we're not going to have to go very far down the preseason odds boards to get a Heisman Trophy winner.
As a Heisman voter, I would tend to agree with that. I think it's going to be predictable position-wise quarterback, because I just don't see a guy at another position. Although there's a pretty good wideout for Miami. I don't know if I see a guy at another position that
Jeremiah Smith, but is are you going to vote for Jeremiah Smith? Again, we don't know.
Julian Sain is going to have monster numbers, right?
And that's why you look at Malachi Toney, or you look at Mark Fletcher. Like, is that going to be a vote split situation if Miami has the type of year that people think that they ultimately are going to have? So yeah, it's a good discussion, and hopefully we can have it again at some point this year.
I hope so too, and I hope we can have a discussion with you down the road, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure. Been too long since we had you on this show. Plug everything you got going on, because you got a lot.
Yeah, Bear Best Podcast. We'll have three shows during the season on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, review podcast. Kind of a Monday look back, Wednesday, Thursday pod, and then Friday kind of quick hitting. We got columns up there and picks throughout, and obviously Twitter and Instagram. You can find me all over the place. More places than you need to see me, and then Big Noon Kickoff Saturday mornings on Fox.
That'll be great. And for our fanatical World Cup gamblers that listen to this show,
yes,
U.S., Belgium.
They are rightly priced. I give the U.S. an excellent chance of getting through, but Belgium has been terrible. They were extremely fortunate to get it. Senegal completely bottled that match. It'll be interesting to see what kind of lineup Belgium comes out with, because they were clearly better without Kevin De Bruyne and Jeremy Doku on the pitch, and the backups came in and played well. But I give the U.S., even without Flo Balogun, a really good chance to get through, because outside of the late rally yesterday and then a five-goal performance against a terrible New Zealand side, Belgium have been bad. So I think the U.S. has a great chance to get through to the quarterfinal, where ultimately I think it will come to an end against either Spain or Portugal. But if they get to quarterfinal, as far as they've ever gotten, and they certainly will have earned it and really united everybody here and everybody rooting for the home team.
It's been a heck of a story, and I will say this in closing. I know a ton of people that have never bet on soccer in their lives, but they are on their phones, and they are placing whatever weight you're
making.
So they've caught the fever in a number of ways. Chris, man, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the offseason. There's not much left of it, but enjoy what you can, and we'll talk to you maybe during the year.
Definitely. Take care. Great talking to
you. You got it. Thank you much. He's the Bear, Chris Felica, joining us here on the show. We'll take a quick timeout. I promise some of those rankings and a couple other little tidbits that we'll pass along to you in closing. JC and Morgan continues, powered by Advocare, advocare.com. Use promo code Mike Morgan, save 20% off, not one item, not two items, but your entire order. More JCM coming up after the break.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
Hey folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience, based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
This is JC Morgan
on the Chief Sports Network.
College football forever.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Like I said, we haven't had Chris on. There's not many people left on the guest list that I think we'd really want on the show that haven't already been on the show. And of course, some people have been on multiple times. You know, we go to our bag of favorites, guys like Brando and Luganville, and for a time, Josh Pate. We'll see if Josh is not too big time now to join us again. But just there's some people that I've always admired, and I just kind of, quite frankly, just slipped my mind. But Felica would be a great weekly guest, quite frankly. And, you know, obviously did great work at ESPN and is now doing it for Fox. So happy for him. Again, a grinder, a guy that behind the scenes, before you ever knew the name, was doing a lot for the people you see sounding so knowledgeable on TV. And for those of us that work in that industry, I can tell you a lot of the things that we come up with that sound incredibly smart are because of guys like that are working behind the scenes. So thanks again to Chris. Thanks again for everybody tuning in here today on July 4th week. We'll be back with another guest next week. We're not taking vacation around here. But I thought this was interesting. First off, the polls. There's five magazines out now, and I think just about everyone, Cianza, who we did have on the show, Pick Six Previews, I think his comes out this week. I'm waiting for my hard copy. But he does a great job. And again, he's the opposite of Phil Steele and Phil's 370-some-odd pages. He is nothing but Power Four teams. And every statistic is in contrast to the other Power Four matchups. So if you're just stockpiling stats against an FCS opponent, that doesn't really count in his world. I do like that as an alternative. But he doesn't have his poll out yet, but Steele, Athlon's, Lindy's, and yes, the Sporting News is back, and ESPN has a college football magazine. They're back. And as I mentioned, there are four different number ones out of the five polls. Steele has Notre Dame, Lindy's has Oregon, Sporting News has Indiana, and then ESPN has Ohio State, and Athlon has Ohio State. So we're not used to seeing like that many different number ones. You know, you go 2 through 10 and you're going to see a lot of the usual suspects. There's going to be, as I just mentioned, the four number ones, Georgia, Texas, Miami. Some people still have Bama ranked very highly in the top 10, Texas Tech as well. Some have LSU. Other people think LSU is going to fall flat. Quite frankly, a lot of people are hoping Lane Kiffin and LSU fall flat. You know, ESPN has Sporting News has Southern Cal in the top 10 and Oklahoma. So to go back to one of the points that we discussed with the Bear, it's more of a diverse pot, if you will, at the top. It's not the same where we went into a pattern where every year was Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. And then we added Georgia. But we are now at the point where once Indiana wins a national championship, and we did that show right after they did, JC and I were live on this show. It's one of our most listened to shows ever. And the majority of the people that are tuning in were not Indiana fans, but so many of you were giddy because you just, no matter who your school is, who you're a fan of, if you see Indiana win it, you're like, if they can do it, anybody can. I mean, I had my first trip ever to Bloomington this year, and it's a beautiful campus, massive enrollment, a lot of things that if you didn't know any better, you would say you're at an SEC school. But when you go to that stadium, it doesn't feel big time, honestly. It just doesn't. And they had no tradition. They were the laughingstock of Division I, forget about the Big Ten, for so many years. So what Cignetti does is, he just convinces everybody, I can do it. I can do it. I got the portal to continually give me a shot at quarterback because I'm not going to recruit five-star blue-chip guys at IU. Most schools can't and won't. But in the portal is the equalizer at that position, which is by far and away the most important out there. And then if you can get other guys to bolster your lineup on the line of scrimmage. I mean, Miami, we talked about Miami quite a bit. Go look at their line of scrimmage, which was, for my money, the best in college football. It was a ton of portal guys. I mean, it wasn't like homegrown talent, even in a school that resides in fertile recruiting territory in South Florida. All right, one other stat before we say goodbye here. I thought this was interesting. The last 10 national championships ranked in rushing offense, how many do you think are actually in the top 10? You know, for years, you'd have the guy who thought he was kind of splitting the atom by saying, I'll tell you the key to winning in college football. It's running and stopping the run. Well, this would say a little bit to the contrary. Now, Indiana last year certainly ran the ball well, but without Mendoza, they're not winning a national championship. But they were 12th in the country in rushing. That's a good number. The year before that, Ohio State, 57th. The year before that, Harbaugh and Michigan, gritty, gutty, tough, strong, blocking tackle Michigan, they were 54th in the country in rushing. Georgia's two title teams, 37th and 19th. LSU in 2019, we talked about the Joe Burrow year, they were 60th in rushing. Now they had Burrow and Jefferson and Jamar Chase, like obviously the right play there was to throw it, even though you had some good running backs. The only team that was in the top 10, winning a national title, top 10 rushing in the country, 2018 Clemson. And of course, a lot of those yards are from the quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. So I thought that was a little interesting. There's your water cooler stat. If you happen to find a water cooler on the 4th of July weekend, go share that with family and friends. Go share this fine podcast with your family and friends. If JC were here, he would tell you we're on every imaginable platform and how to get there and whatnot. You folks by now know we've been in a little bit of a transitionary phase, but we are happy to be a part of the On3 network. And of course, we're still on YouTube and iTunes and everything else. Our thanks again to the Bear, Chris Felica, for joining us, and the Mad Dog, Phil Mullinax, doing great duty behind the scenes. For everybody involved, this is Mike saying so long for now. We'll see you next week on another installment of JC and Morgan, powered by Advocare.